the whole business then really started in 1951. I mean, that's when I became head, and that's when we started to change the department. Although at the beginning, I made a lot of mistakes.
Well, I wanted to sort of work through two different things, I suppose. One being some of the work you were doing, the mathematics, and the other was the development of the department. And I don't know if it's better to separate them or develop them together.
We can separate them. I think let me speak of the work I was doing, and I will also give you a copy of the founder's lecture that I gave in Washington week before last.
Excellent.
But when I was at Brown, one of the things that I got exposed to, in addition to a lot of other things, was a field at that time that was called nonlinear mechanics. And in that year, 1947, a book came out called Introduction to Nonlinear Mechanics by a fellow named Minorsky, Minorsky, Nicholas Minorsky. And he had been at the model of Payson for ONR for a long time, and he wrote this thing called Introduction to Nonlinear Mechanics. And that was one of the things I did at Brown. Okay, and the other thing is I learned a lot about partial differential equations, which is the way I spent the rest of my life. Okay, so in early 1950s, and I started to look around. I was now in a chemical engineering department. I had to do research. I wasn't a mathematician anymore, okay? So I had to figure out something to do, okay? So what I discovered was that no one had ever used these schemes of nonlinear mechanics on chemical systems, okay? They used them on mechanical systems, and they used them on electrical systems, where they studied multiple steady states and oscillatory solutions and instabilities, resonance and bifurcations and limit cycles and a lot of stuff for mechanical and electrical systems, but no one had ever made the application to systems where chemical reactions were coupled with some other physical phenomena, either heat transfer, diffusion, fluid mechanics, or anything else. And in 1952 and 1953, I worked out applications to mostly what we call stirred pots in chemical engineering. Okay, it's a continuous chemical reactor that looks like a batch reactor, except you have a continuous feed in and a continuous output out of it. Okay, and that's the scheme which is used for most polymerization reactors. Okay, they're called continuous stirred tank reactors, sometimes operated singly, often consecutively. Okay, and so I took the very simplest one with a very simple reaction, A going to B, okay, exothermic, and sure enough, you could show that there could be three steady states, one of which would always be unstable. You could juggle the parameters so the system actually would oscillate, you know. And that's how that whole thing started. Our first paper, I think, showed up in that in 1956, but I'm not really sure. Oleg Blue wrote the first one. Oleg Blue and I think wrote the first one in 1956. Then at the same time, Hillhouse got for the university an analog computer, and this is called a Reeves Automatic Electronic Computer, REAC, it was called.
After you came back from Cambridge?
After I came back from Brown.
Okay.
But hadn't gone to Cambridge yet. Gone to Cambridge. Okay. I think that first paper came out, you have the Vita there.
Yes.
We could find it. Yeah, just hand it to me. I think I can find it fast. Okay. That came out in 1955, although he submitted it before I went to Cambridge. Now, these...
you had this earlier series on...
Yeah. These here were all things I didn't heat transfer. These were all what we call operations in fixed bits. Okay, that's what all these are here. And these were all analytical things that I did along with some students. Okay, and these were all problems that nobody had ever set up the models before and generated solutions to those. And we did all of those from, those really got started in 1949, and they ran through 1954 when I left. And then there was a paper showed up in the Journal of Physical Chemistry by the fellow who was at Northwestern for years, Klotz. Did you remember him?
Irving Klotz?
Irving Klotz, okay.
Yeah.
And let me see what the first one was that I did that followed that one. This one here. This one here, the second one I ever wrote, all the stuff where it says adsorption, it all followed from that thing that I read that was quotes. All the stuff that you see through here on chromatography, adsorption, that all followed when I saw that article by quotes. Okay? That's where all that followed. Okay? All that followed from his, and I saw him year before last, I think it was, when I was up there, and I promised him I would actually send him all that stuff, which I've never done, because he was responsible, really, for that. He had written this thing. He had worked, I think, for ONR or for the Army, during the war on gas masks. Okay, so he wrote this article on adsorption on carbon. Okay, and I could see that there was a whole mathematical thing there, and I milked it dry. Okay. But all the things that are on adsorption and chromatography theory that you see here, they all followed from that one idea. Okay, so the one idea that started all the stuff on reactor stability, multiplicity, limit cycles, that all started from that thing in nonlinear mechanics. All the stuff on chromatography and the stuff on heat transfer and fixed beds and mass transfer and fixed beds, that all derived from that one article of Irving Kolb's. And through the years, up until and all the stuff they did on distillation, which you see following that, that all followed from the first thing they did, actually for the master's thesis. So those were the three germs that mainly spread. Okay. Most of the stuff that I've done in the last 15 years really started when I thought back about 1974 that everybody should be working on the energy problem. So I started to work about how carbon burns and gasification of coal and all that kind of stuff. Followed from really 1973 when I thought that, you know, the a lot of us ought to be interested in the energy problem. That, I'd say, was the most unsatisfactory part of the business. The other three areas were very satisfactory, but the whole business of char gasification and char burning and gasification and fluidization and so on, I've never been happy with that.
Back when you were starting these series very early on, how readily were you able to attract graduates?
Easily. You see, the University of Minnesota was the first chemical engineering department to exploit what you could do with mathematics. And every time somebody at Illinois or Wisconsin or Texas had a student who looked like he had mathematical inclinations, they sent them to us. Okay. So I had for years there from, I hate to say when it started, but say from 55, 56 sometime through the late 60s, I probably had four or five PhD students a year. Okay. I think at one time I had 13 doctoral students working for me, all on this analytical stuff. Okay. And so the University of Minnesota really changed the whole mathematical outlook of chemical engineering. It all started in Minneapolis. It's not something I did all by myself, okay? Because in 55, I hired Rutherford Harris, okay? And in 1956, we hired Scriven. And in that same year, we hired John Dollar. And we hired a whole faculty whose total interest was mathematical developments of various things. For a long time, I hired no experimentalists at all. Okay, they were all analytical, theoretical types. See, we didn't hire any experimentalists because we didn't have any money. I mean, you know, the University of Minnesota and chemical engineering, our budget was exhausted by January of every year. OK. Okay, and from that point on, it was deficit spending. Okay, and we had just didn't have any money of any kind. So that those three areas, chromatography, distillation, chemical reactor development, all really started from the three germs, as I said, that we had there. And I we really started what I would say is this, and one of the things I said at the founders lecture is that a DuPont, for example, Exxon, Monsanto, designed all kinds of chemical reactors, okay? But University of Minnesota started the generic study of chemical reactors. See, and there's a fundamental difference in that, because in the generic study of chemical reactors, what you're trying to find is, what is the structure of the solution space? When are there multiple steady states? When is the parametric sensitivity? When do all these things happen? Okay? Now, DuPont would mostly design chemical reactors for a long time by starting out with a small unit, and then they would build a bigger unit, and then they'd build a bigger unit. And they scaled up from one pilot plant to another pilot plant. That's not what I call design, okay? I don't call that design. When I gave the founders a lecture, Sheldon Isakoff came up afterwards, and he said, well, you know, we designed chemical reactors a long time ago. I says, yeah, but Sheldon, you didn't understand what I'm saying. I'm talking about the rational design from fundamental of principles, not scale up. Okay? But all that started really at the University of Minnesota.
What was the response of the profession when you first started?
Dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. I mean, stories, you know, that I could tell you would actually be hair-raising. There was a fellow who worked for Monsanto. He was the only one who was very, very supportive, because he said that he had worked for a long time on reactors involving the hydrolysis of acrylamide on nitrile. And he says those reactors are highly exothermic, and lots of times they don't work. And he says, I think you discovered why. Okay? But I know, hell, I went to the DuPont company in 1957, you know, and I went to the Chambers Works and gave a seminar, which, you know, was really the center of their activity. And, you know, when I started to talk about multiple steady states and unstable states and parametric sensitivity, there were actually snickers, okay? And then, for example, after the lecture was over, we'd be looking out for coffee, and some fellow would come and say, he says, you know, we have a reactor out here, and sometimes it makes a product, and sometimes it doesn't. And I says, well, you just discovered your first unstable reactor. Okay. And one very prominent chemical engineer, after I gave the seminar, got up in front of all of his students and says, God wouldn't permit a reactor to have more than one steady state. Okay. Now the DuPont company, after 30 years, is now sponsoring internal symposia on reactors, stability and sensitivity and so on. They're having their own internal symposia on these. Now, after 30 years, they discovered it's really important.
Did you have trouble getting papers published at all?
No. Pretty. Mm-mm. Didn't have any trouble. Well, yes. I'd say to begin with, we did. Because the in the early days, the journals that were actually done by the Institute, American Institute of Chemical Engineers, were very, very conservative. And they didn't want to publish anything at all that wasn't experimental. Okay. And they rejected one. They rejected this one here with Monroe, M-U-N-R-O, where is it here? This one here. These. They rejected these with Monroe. 1, 2, and 3 there should be. No, the this one here. Yeah. There are three here.
Okay.
They rejected those. And then I sent it off to INEC and they accepted it. Okay. And about 5 years after that, the AICHE had a STAR committee, which was went to look into publication policies of the AICHE journals. And the fellow who was chairman of the committee asked me why we had published that paper in INEC instead of in an AICHE journal. And fortunately, although I never used to save anything, I had the rejection thing that I had gotten from, and I sent them that. And that is when AICHE then changed their publication policy and started the journal called the AICHE Journal. Okay. That's when they started that. So, we didn't have much trouble. I think a lot of people didn't understand what was going on. I have
a quote that from someone who indicated that, essentially.
Yeah.
That you, well, the question, the response I saw was that you didn't do any experimental work,
right.
But you expected other people to test your theory.
Right.
And he felt that somebody should test their own theories. That was one comment.
Yeah.
But the other was that most people just didn't understand what you were doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
He did admit that later on he appreciated that,
yeah.
You know, what
right.
you were doing was right.
Yeah.
But I guess at the time, it was not something that many engineers could follow, maybe the mathematics as much as.
But there's a lot of it, you see, shows up in chemical engineering science,
mm-hmm.
You see, and this chemical engineering science was a journal that got started just before the AICHE journal got started. Okay. And they were hungry to have papers. Okay. And I think therefore they probably published a lot of stuff that they might not have published otherwise. Now you want to talk about the department now?
Yes, in fact, one of my